Hey there, everybody. You are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. This is episode number 374. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us a line. Send an email on over to ken@thisshowissogay.com. Stroll on over to thisshowissogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. You can follow us on Twitter. The handle is thisshowissogay. And of course, go on over to that Facebook. Type in This Show Is So Gay, like us, because we sure as heck like you. Well, my friends, I had just an absolute blast spending some of my weekend watching the first two episodes of Queer Ghost Hunters. Queer Ghost Hunters is a docuseries on the web right this very second, and it follows the first group in the world that is contacting LGBTQ ghosts. The first season was self-funded, and they are looking for funding for the second season, which we all need to help out with. This is how we create the content we want to see. Here to tell us all about Queer Ghost Hunters are the creator and award-winning director, Stu Maddox, and one of the co-founders of the team, Shane McClellan. Stu, Shane, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Oh, it's great to be here.
Yes, thank you.
Stu, let's start with you. I don't know if you heard, but Queer Ghost Hunters. I just kept thinking, you know, what my mom would say is, just when you thought you heard it all, and then Queer Ghost Hunters. Where did this come from?
I know, right? I mean, all you have to do is say the words Queer Ghost Hunters, and it's like a director's dream. It's like the perfect pitch, right?
It is.
What more do you need to say, right? So, well, the idea came from somebody just saying that to me. The program director at Stonewall Columbus, there in Columbus, Ohio, was giving me a ride from the airport for a screening of another film, and she said, we're doing this, and we're doing queer ghost hunting, and it was like, time stopped in that moment. I turned to her and I said, that's my next project. Let's do it. And that was a year ago.
And here we are a year later. Shane, you're right up the road in Columbus. What brought you to the Queer Ghost Hunters?
Yeah, I was actually working with Lori at Stonewall Columbus. And her and I were coming back from an investigation at Waverly Hills. And, it's 4 o'clock in the morning or 5 o'clock in the morning. And we're having one of our long car ride chats, and we kind of got to talking and realized that even though, you know, she's a lesbian and I'm a gay man and we hunt with other members of the LGBTQ community, we still asked heteronormative questions to the entities, and we thought it was weird that we never asked any of them if they might be queer. So we started doing that on future investigations.
Shane, you somehow have started your story as if our audience doesn't need more backstory as how you became a ghost hunter. You just started with, oh yeah, we were just meeting up for the... But there had to have been a point where you said, I think we skipped something here, buddy. Or where did ghost hunting come into your life?
Yeah, no, I mean, it was something that I had always been interested in since I was a little kid. I had kind of been able to feel when something was around. I had experienced a lot of paranormal things throughout my life, and the paranormal investigation shows started becoming more popular on TV, and when the opportunity arose to actually go on an investigation, I jumped at it, and it had become a fun hobby after that.
Okay, you got to tell us about your first time doing that. What was that like?
Yeah, so it was fascinating, really. I was at the Old Licking County Jail, which is around Columbus here, and I was actually with Lori and some of our other friends, and, the first part of the investigation that we did, we were doing EVP work, so we had a recorder out, and we were asking questions. There were, I think, five of us sitting in a circle in one of the jail cells, and we asked, a few questions, probably like 3 minutes worth, and then we played it back and listened. And in that recording, you can hear you could hear footsteps, you could hear someone crying. We had I forget what the question was, but there was an actual answer on the recording, and I was completely 100% hooked on finding additional evidence after that.
I got to be honest with you. Hooked, not the word that I would use for that experience. Frightened out of my mind might be something a little closer, but that's okay. All right, Stu, you hear about these ghost hunters. You're thinking, this has to be my next project. What is going through your head about how you start to put this together?
Well, I mean, I thought it was going to be this funny kind of parody of ghost hunting shows, and it turned out it has been, but you know, the more I got into it, the more I realized they really make a good point. Like, of course, I identify as a gay man, cisgender gay man, and of course, you know, people who identify in the queer community probably were the ones that were put in prisons and institutionalized. It just would make more sense that there would be more ghosts out there of us. And so it was the combination of, this is just hilarious, and hey, they've got a really good point here. And then the next thing that kept happening was young people started, you know, writing in comments to our clips that said, wow, I have never really seen myself doing anything on TV, much less ghost hunting. And so that has been like the real heartwarming part of this that we didn't expect.
It's quite an eclectic team. Who goes about putting together the team? Whose responsibility was that?
Well, that was the team. That's one of the great things about it from a documentary standpoint, was this was the team that was there, and it did have all this wonderful rich diversity in it already. So, and they were smart and funny and actually finding some really cool stuff. So it was already there.
Is there no part of you, Stu, that was freaked out during this? Shane's used to it. He does this all the time. What about you, sir?
Okay, so what's freaky about this is I get this warm feeling in these dark, scary places. It's like I feel at home. Now, I don't know what that means, and I imagine I'll be exploring that as the series goes on behind the camera, but yeah, it's really interesting to what it's like being in the dark looking for entities after 4 or 5 hours. It kind of has a little bit of, I don't know, some kind of effect on each person a little bit differently, and for me, it's just kind of like I feel at home.
I am burning sage right after this interview. I have never, in 8 years of doing this show, I have never had to burn sage after an episode, but that's going to have to happen. Okay, Shane, one of the things that I loved about watching this, I'm really and truly, and I don't just throw comments like this out there, I'm so excited for more content. One of the things that I love about all this is that you are uncovering hidden LGBT history. It's not just about trying to make contact, but there's also a historical aspect to all of this.
Yeah, that definitely. We were, you know, as a community, more heavily incarcerated and institutionalized than, you know, probably all, at least most of the segments of society, you know, just based on who we love. You know, it was against the law, and it was a mental illness. So it's wonderful to get out there and be able to tell these stories, and really to also kind of remind people of the history that, you know, none of us were taught this. And it's really something that's been deleted from the history books. And we, you know, it's just a fun way to really get to tell the story of our community as a whole and share the stories of people who were, you know, very legitimately forgotten.
Yeah. Now, in 2 episodes, I don't quite know your role yet, Shane. I'm kind of excited to find out. You have not been heavily featured yet. What are we going to learn about your role on this team?
Well, I think, and Stu can correct me, that might be coming up soon. But, you know,
Shane.
Good. Okay, good.
But really, it's just, you know, organizing it. And really, I have just, like, a wealth of knowledge about, like, what we're doing, why we're doing it, how it works, what the theory is behind it. So I don't want to, like, be a self-proclaimed, like, team expert, but I kind of just... when we need to know something or someone needs it explained to them, they kind of rely on me for that.
All right. We can do a little therapy right now without you here, Shane. Stu, what would you say that Shane's role is on the team?
Well, he kind of nailed it there. So, you know, we spent a couple minutes in this next episode talking about what each person brings to the group. And for Shane, it's like everybody says, he's ghost bait. So... when people want to make contact, they bring Shane along because he seems to attract ghosts. And that seems to be what we're finding, at least in this next episode, because one of the other people brings him along to make contact with
a lesbian nun ghost that she's interested in learning more about.
I'm going to be honest right here, Shane. I have seen your LinkedIn page, Ghost Bait, nowhere on there.
Yeah, you know, it's not something that I try to bring up in a professional conversation.
Okay.
Unless it's ghost hunting related.
I'm just saying. All right, Stu, now I would imagine that one of the challenges in directing all of this is that the content just doesn't happen because you will it to be so. I would imagine that you've had to do some sitting around until something happens.
Yeah, and everything gets rolled on as much as we can. One of the challenges and one of the reasons that we're trying to, you know, raise money is to get cameras in everybody's hands because so much does happen when they break out in these little groups at, say, a big, huge prison or something like that we miss stuff. But we roll on everything and then cut to me in an edit room with somebody else, and we're going through hour after hour of nothing going on. But we do, I mean, things do happen during the night, and so, you know, that's obviously what we focus on. But there is a lot of stuff that just doesn't happen, and it's really dark. And so, you know, when you see an orb or something like that, that's a big moment, you know, in the whole evening. So,
what do you mean when you see an orb? We're going to see an orb?
Yeah, Shane, I'm talking about when you and Lori are in the nun's bedroom. In the next episode, you say that you're seeing some orbs as Lori tries to contact the nun. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I do, yeah. We were in, I guess, her bedroom. I'm on, like, a small little camera using the night vision. And, you know, on the orbs are, you can see an orb with a naked eye. That's very rare, but it happens. But a lot of times with, you know, night vision or a camera in general, it's easier to detect that. And, you know, there's also dust, all right? And we're in this old convent. There's dust everywhere. But these particles weren't behaving, you know, they weren't floating necessarily like dust moves through the air. They were kind of diving into Lori and moving back out as she's trying to make contact with the nun and, you know, is making contact with the nun. And it was just very interesting to watch that. So while I'm watching it on the screen, I mentioned to Lori that we definitely need to review this because I think we actually are documenting whatever entity is interacting with her.
Stu, are you gasping behind the camera? Because, you know, you're not a professional ghost hunter, sir. Other people are. And I would imagine there are some moments where that maybe freak you out a little, even though, yes, I'm sure you're getting warm during these encounters, which we'll cover later.
Yeah, well, so I'm always bringing up the rear, you know, so to speak. And that's really kind of scary. It's like there's a long line of people going down a dark hallway, and I'm always in the back, like getting a shot of them going wherever they're going. So, yeah, I always feel like something is, like, behind me. It's creepy.
I'm so freaked out by this whole interview, even as I was so entertained by this experience. Okay, again, listeners, we are here with Stu and Shane of Queer Ghost Hunters. As I mentioned in the intro, they are looking for some funding. What do we need funding for, Stu?
Well, I mean, obviously, it takes a lot to actually get the team together to go someplace, and these places charge, and then it takes a lot of money to put it together, and then just to get it out there. So what we're trying to do... I believed in this project enough to fund the first, you know, four episodes myself through October for LGBT History Month and Halloween. But going forward after that, we want to make additional episodes, and that's what this is for, to continue the story, because there's so much good stuff, and it seems to really be impacting people, not just entertaining them. That's what was surprising. So that's what that's for.
Well, let me tell you what's not surprising about the fact that it is having an impact on people, and I think, Shane, you can speak to this. This is an extraordinarily eclectic group of folks. Tell our listeners just about how diverse this team is.
Yeah, I mean, we, through happenstance, we are able to represent the, you know, a very large portion of the queer spectrum. You know, we have gays and lesbians, we have transgender members, and we also have Victoria, and I'm blanking on exactly how she identifies, but, you know, it's really just a wonderful mix of folks that, you know, are really underrepresented in everyday media.
Yeah. In particular, in episode one, and everybody can check this out, the first two episodes are up on YouTube. Tell everybody about Kai, because I found that featuring Kai's story was extraordinarily powerful right there at the start.
Yeah, Kai is, you know, he's wonderful, and he's trans, and he has Asperger's, and it's just, you know, I remember meeting Kai at one of the, we did like a Queer Ghost Hunting 101 seminar, and I came to it and was just completely like beside himself with excitement, and it, Kai's grown so much as just a person. It's been wonderful to watch, and he's really just truly been inspirational, and the comments that he's receiving online are just absolutely wonderful.
I bet. All right, well, let's talk about some ephemera that I am obsessed with from this show. Stu, I have to tell you, I previously wanted Morgan Freeman to narrate my life. Now, though, I want the narrator from Queer Ghost Hunters to narrate my life. Who is doing that, and what is happening there?
Okay, so I met this person. His name is Mike Cooper, like 3 weeks ago at a screening of another film of mine in Asheville, North Carolina, and he actually recognized some friends in the movie. So he came up to me afterwards and said, hey, he said, hey, in this very rich voice. And he explained that he does voice work. And the more I heard his voice over coffee, the more I imagined these lines in episode one. And, you know, lo and behold, we have this like BBC-sounding documentary feel to Queer Ghost Hunters. And it's become its own character, I think. And yeah, so he's a British expat. He has an American husband, and they raise goats in Asheville, North Carolina.
Amazing. Amazing. Because I will say he has some snarky lines. If I were to say the line, the team leader attempts contact by coming out to dead nuns, it's not the same as when he says it. And when he says it, I mean, I was laughing out loud at that.
Yeah, I mean, there's the absurdity of all this, right? I mean, your listeners are going, this is absurd. We all understand how this looks. So, you know, you kind of try to make it as flat as possible. And when you have somebody like that reading a line that is just deadpan flat, that is exactly what's going on, it's funny. So that's what I mean. The challenge is getting through the voiceover session, because one of the lines in last week's episode was about the ghost hunter that identifies as a bear, Scott Pretty, was talking about how he's single and
yes,
joined the Queer Ghost Hunters to, you know, maybe meet some guys. And I asked him, is that, you know, is that on your Scruff profile? And he said, I'm not on Scruff. And so on, the conversation goes on. But then we come back afterwards, and that British voiceover says, research indicates that the bear is now on Scruff. Well, it took us about 10 minutes to get through that line in the voiceover session. It was pretty funny.
I laughed for about that long. That was good stuff. Good stuff. Another thing that I love, Shane, please say that one of you two did the logo, because I love that logo.
That is such a long story. Actually, we had some inspiration that we found online, but the marketing director at Stonewall Columbus actually helped us put together a final version of our logo.
I love it. Now, Shane, what do you hope that people get out of this? It's a little bit different for you, because you're not a filmmaker. You're actually experiencing this. And so when people watch this, what do you want people to get out of it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, at first I want them, you know, I want them to be entertained, but really the takeaway for me that I hope people are getting is really just the history and the uniqueness of our community, you know, today and through the course of time. I think that's something that as the series goes on, we're really able to kind of convey that, you know, we've always been here, we've always been doing stuff, and we've always existed, even though these bad things were happening to us and we couldn't necessarily exist publicly. We had, you know, a rich community and culture. And I think that's something that we definitely are trying to convey through the series.
Yeah. You got some press a little bit earlier today, Stu, from Mashable.com. That was pretty cool. It was interesting because the press, and we'll link to it for everybody, brilliant series Queer Ghost Hunters reaches out to Misunderstood. And when I saw the headline, I actually assumed it was talking about members of the LGBT community, not necessarily the undead LGBTQ community. And I think that it does both. I love the idea that we're getting at some history here, but also there are marginalized identities present on the team, and it must be a great thing for you to be able to feature them.
The comments are just amazing. In fact, we were talking about the announcer earlier, and somebody who identifies, I believe, as gender fluid, said in one of the comments, "I never thought I would hear a professional announcer say what I am, gender fluid, in a program." So, yeah, that's very cool. That's what makes doing something like this worth it, is it's funny and it's fun to do, but then you kind of, in a fun and fascinating way, are actually impacting people. Yeah, that's what makes it possible to, like, keep on going at 2 a.m. in the morning when you're trying to get an episode done.
Yeah. All right, Shane, tell our listeners, give the pitch for why they should pitch in and fund this.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's really just goes back to what I had said. We have such a wonderful and fascinating queer history. And, you know, one of the methods of discovering that history and restoring that page to the history books is through queer ghost hunting. And it's really the only show that explores queer history, also allows us to interact and communicate with entities that existed through various times in history. So if you want to keep seeing, you know, cool queer history, you should definitely pitch into the Kickstarter.
Yes, everybody can contribute. There's all of these different levels. You can get things for the levels. I like getting a t-shirt. I like getting access to things. So I'm going to contribute right after this episode, and I encourage everybody else to do that, and we'll link to that. You can just go to kickstarter.com and type in Queer Ghost Hunters docuseries. Stu, I cannot have you on this show Is So Gay without diverting for a couple seconds, and I could potentially, by the way, get choked up during this. I cannot express enough appreciation to you, sir, for the creation of Jen Silent, which has affected my life quite deeply.
Oh, thank you. Yes. Well, mine too. And I think it's just been one of those things where it took on a life of its own and was bigger than any of us who were involved. And it's been one of the greatest gifts of my life, and especially because I hear things like what you just said. So we had some great people in that film. It's a... So your listeners are aware, it's about a group of LGBT older people who are going back into the closet because they're afraid of the people taking care of them. And it's been a movement that has been going on. I call it a movement. I'm sorry. It's been a trend. The movement has been to reverse that and to kind of address the need for cultural competency among caregivers and among other seniors as well, you know, because these are folks who... You know, this is our greatest generation. They fought so hard to come out. We need to make sure they don't have to go back in.
Yeah. I would imagine that you have just received the most incredible feedback for that film.
Yeah, I think what happens often is somebody who's starting their career or starting out comes up and says, you know, I saw that film and I'm going to go into nursing, or I'm going to go into, or social work. And to hear that, and to know that you've gotten them aligned with a certain viewpoint that they're going to carry throughout their lives and share with others is the greatest reward that a film, you know, awards are great, but this is the reward, I think, of filmmaking, is being able to affect people on a one-on-one basis.
And I do want to draw maybe a dotted line over to Queer Ghost Hunters, because there is something intergenerational about that team, and I've been saying this for years and years on this show. That's one of the things that we don't always as a community do so well with. We're not always so great at establishing those intergenerational lines, and it's so important. I mean, that's where these incredible conversations can take place.
You know, and that's why I made Jen Silent, and that's why I made Real in the Closet, the documentary about LGBT home movies being saved, and now this. It's all about the intergenerational connection, because, you know, I've watched my community be isolated, not just geographically or societally, but also in time. We think that we just started out, and to be able to contact or see ourselves in the past is a sense of pride that I have never felt before, not at the parade, not when we make some breakthrough in the news, but to see people carving out happy lives through adversity 100 years ago, 50 years ago. Now I'm part of a people, and I know that I can get through whatever, you know, comes our way, you know, in our generation. And I'm just part of something that I'm going to pass on. And so, you know, it does make history, kind of the H word, actually really important, really, really compelling and interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I made the decision. I'm a college professor, so I have summers off, and I made the decision to volunteer at our LGBT Center of Greater Cleveland here in Cleveland, Ohio. And it was just going to be a summer thing for me. And I've decided that I decided months and months ago when the semester started that I wasn't done volunteering there. And I volunteer every Friday, and I will be very upfront as I am there. The reason that I volunteer every Friday is because that's when our seniors meet, and I do not want to lose contact with them. I want to be around them every Friday, because I so enjoy interacting with them, and I think it's such a vital part of our community.
And the stories are amazing. I mean, just let them talk, and you will, I mean, how they met each other, you know, how they navigated workplace situation, all this stuff is just like, it's better than any other story, I think, of the 20, well, okay, let me not go there, but I think it's like, it's up there in the top five, you know, stories of subcultures out there in the 20th century.
I love the idea that you're saying, let them talk. I can't get a word in, Stu, so that's not really an issue.
Yeah, you know, so when we sometimes we do intergenerational programs ourselves, and we have to tell them to shut up.
So
because they really, once they start listening to the younger people, they really learn something. So, you know, it's a two-way street.
Yeah. Yeah. Shane, what do you get? What do you get out of being a part of this experience?
I think just really the satisfaction of seeing how well it's been received and the impact that it's actually having on people. It wasn't something that I think any of us foresaw, but when people are, you know, tweeting at you or direct messaging you or even just leaving a comment on a YouTube video telling you that, you know, this is amazing and that they're so happy to see people like them doing something like this. It's really heartwarming.
Yeah. I'm in Columbus once a month. What are the odds that I would survive a ghost hunting experience?
If you're doing a story on it, I'd say like 100%.
There you go. Yeah. I feel like I would be a little bit scared, Shane. There have to be people who do it once and then they're like, I just cannot do this again. I got freaked out.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think everyone that has gone on a ghost hunt has come back for at least one more. We haven't had anything too horrific happen. And honestly, you know, just like the methods that we use, we're not provoking people or entities. We're, you know, we try to keep it calm and happy. And we've had a lot of success doing that. So.
I love it. I love it. All right, listeners, this is what you guys need to do. You can type in Queer Ghost Hunters over on the YouTube and watch the first two parts that are on there. You must, and we will link to it, you must go to Kickstarter.com and type in Queer Ghost Hunters docuseries. We'll link to that as well. This is what we talk about for all of you who are out there complaining. Where's the content we want to see? Where's the content we want to see? This is your opportunity. This is the great thing about crowdsource funding is that it is in your hands. You can contribute towards creating the content that you want to see. And this is just funny, right? Like, there's the part where this is endlessly entertaining. I was laughing out loud. And then, as you all say on that site, this whole element of unearthing hidden history about lost queer lives, it is incredibly poignant. So there is depth, there is humor, and this is the kind of the content that we want to see out there. So we agree, gentlemen, that people have to go out there and help fund it, correct?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that we've done as much as we can, and we see the potential out there to go out and not just entertain people, but really kind of find these things that have been looked over. They've never been looked at through the queer eye before. Historic records, places, stories, and the Queer Ghost Hunters are now doing it. So please help us do that as well.
There it is. So much fun. I am going to go run out and buy some sage and go burn that. Gentlemen, what an absolute treat having you on the show. I so hope this gets funded because I want to see so much more of this.
Thank you, Ken. Thanks for the plug and helping us get there.
All right, folks, and we are back. Well, we have tons of time left on this week's episode to get to all of the latest LGBTQ news that's out there. Yesterday was National Coming Out Day, October 11th, and it was just a wondrous thing on social media, just seeing everybody's posts on Facebook, and they really ran the gamut from snarky people who we knew were gay saying, "I'm gay," to really heartfelt messages of, "Look, I'm gay," or "I'm an ally, and I support all of you in this process," because it really is an individual journey, to individuals who are coming out for the first time. And many people do that through social media. Some people just jump right into the middle of the pool instead of dipping their toes in. And National Coming Out Day is that place where you can be seen, right? Like, it's a great day where you can be out to yourself, or you can be out to other people. And for individuals, no matter where they are, this is one of the biggest fallacies about being in very liberal environments. And I have deliberately chosen to be in extraordinarily liberal environments. I choose to work at liberal arts colleges. But we can't ever for a second assume that just because a student's attending a liberal arts college, or someone is living in a very liberal part of the country, whatever that might be, or a liberal part of town. Here in Cleveland, there's a more liberal part of town than the other part of town. Just because someone is in that locale does not mean that they are coming from either an ideology or a family or a geography that allowed them to be gay. And so just because it's a very open and accepting place, folks still struggle with that coming out process. So I said this to my students in class last night. I have absolutely, absolutely zero tolerance for individuals who say, just come out wherever you are. If you're gay, you just need to come out right now. For many of our brothers and sisters, that's just not the healthiest option. If you are relying on others for financial support, if you are relying on others for emotional support, and perhaps that coming out would jeopardize that and put you into a situation where you are not able to support yourself, either financially or emotionally, no, don't just scream that you're gay. I support you if you want to do that, but I'm a big fan of people thinking through, so what might this be like? How might this affect some of my relationships? It doesn't mean, folks, that we live our lives for other people. That's not what that means. But it does mean that we should have a much more full picture before we engage in this process of just telling other people that we're gay. It's an extraordinarily powerful thing, and I love when people come out, and I love supporting them in that journey. But I like for it to be an informed journey. It's good to know, hey, how might this affect some relationships? It doesn't mean it stops them, but it's just important to think about beforehand. I do receive some emails each week saying that I don't do a very good job covering the conservative part of being gay. So those LGBT conservatives, those LGBT Republicans, and I don't. I am the first to say that. And there are a couple of reasons why not. First of all, because I'm not. Right? This is not a news show. I do mention a lot of the news that's out there, but it certainly is through my bent. It's through my voice. It's through my lens. And so because I'm not super inclined towards that ideology, it's a lot of stuff that I don't cover. But also because I pull my news from various different sites, and most of the various different sites that I pull from, the mainstream media, if you will, you know, advocate.com, Pink News, which is increasingly a great place for me to find news stories, pinknews.co.uk. They have just a nice compendium of the LGBT stories. The LGBT conservative angle doesn't get covered a lot in that news. And so it's nice to get emails that are a good reminder that, yes, there's this other section of the LGBT community that I have to cover, even as I am slightly disinclined to give some of those views credence, and also because it's just harder to get those stories. But I will say that if you are looking for that ideology, there is a new piece that's out there by Chris Barron. It was released yesterday on National Coming Out Day. It's an opinion piece. It's in the Independent Journal Review. The Independent Journal Review, that's IJR.com. Chris Barron was the former executive director or president of GOP Proud, the conservative LGBT group, and he wrote an op-ed that's called, "If You Really Want to Defend the LGBT Community, Then You Should Support Donald Trump." And so you all should know that that's very much a bent of certain individuals in the LGBT community. There's a whole group of folks called LGBT folks, Gays for Trump. Actually, it's called Gays for Trump. It's not anything that I agree with, but you still should all know what the reasoning is behind that. And usually the reasoning behind that is that Donald Trump will be better for the LGBT population. Now, not so much in supporting policy here in the United States, because he has said that he doesn't support the North Carolina access to bathrooms, even though North Carolina doesn't currently support that either. He's not a great person for the LGBT community here in the U.S. for his choice of running mates. Not at all. Governor Pence, really not a friend to the LGBT community. Very much the opposite. But it's very much based on LGBT community supporting Donald Trump that he is the anti-ISIS candidate, which, can I just say, in itself is a little bit silly. I don't think that Hillary Clinton is pro-ISIS. I think she is going to do everything within her power to defeat ISIS as well. But the idea is that Donald Trump will be harder on ISIS and that there is no bigger threat to the LGBT community than ISIS. Certainly, globally, yeah, ISIS beheads gay people. They execute gay people. Not good for gay people, right? But at the same time, I think saying, yes, he's the better candidate for the LGBT community, that's quite misleading. Quite misleading. But hey, important to know that that's part of the ideology behind supporting Donald Trump for the LGBT community, that he would defeat ISIS, and the biggest threat to the LGBT community globally is ISIS. So again, check out Chris Barron. He wrote a piece called If You Really Want to Defend the LGBT Community, Then You Should Support Donald Trump. There's a lot of pieces in this that I don't agree with, but again, I read it because it's important to understand what other people are saying. So there you go. Let's get to North Carolina, because again, I say it every week, it would not be an episode of This Show Is So Gay if we do not cover all the latest in North Carolina. My gosh, they spend so much time and money, and not just they, right, because that's not everybody in North Carolina, but certain Republican government officials are spending a lot of time on just being anti-LGBT. The governor of North Carolina has warned Olympian Caitlyn Jenner not to use the women's bathroom in his state. Why is this even on his radar? But still, Governor Pat McCrory, a Republican who is fighting for re-election next month, he made the claims in a debate with his Democratic opponent, Roy Cooper. Just to remind you, in case somehow you've been living under a rainbow rock, North Carolina has lost a string of big investment ventures over Governor Pat McCrory's decision to sign the contentious HB 2, which voided all local ordinances protecting LGBT rights, banned transgender people from using their preferred bathroom, and permits businesses to discriminate against LGBT people on the grounds of religious belief. His opponent, Cooper, had pledged to repeal the law and protect LGBT people from discrimination, but McCrory continues to insist that is, quote, common sense. Common sense. Certainly not, by the way, fiscal sense. It's not fiscal sense. It's not helping North Carolina. In a long exchange during the TV debate, McCrory insisted, quote, if you're in our schools, if you are a man, you've got to go to the man's locker room, restroom, or shower, and if you're a woman, you've got to go to the appropriate shower. He was asked if the rules should apply to Caitlyn Jenner, and he replied this quote, if she's going to shower at a facility at UNC Chapel Hill after running around the track, she's going to use the men's shower. At one point, his opponent Cooper responded, Governor, what planet are you on? Cooper continued, quote, HB 2 has to be repealed. It writes discrimination into our law, and it has been a disaster for our economy. PayPal, hundreds of jobs. Asheville, hundreds of jobs. The legislation was passed in one day and signed in the middle of the night, but Governor McCrory continues to go across the state saying it's not hurting our economy. He attacks businesses who are opposed to it, and he says everything's going to be fine. We have to pull the business community together. We have to get this law repealed and quit blaming it on other people. What we have to do is repeal House Bill 2 now. And polling has showed that Governor McCrory currently trailing in that race. That is all the latest in North Carolina. We will see what next week brings. Over in England, gay UKIP candidate Peter Whittle has thrown his hat into the ring to lead his party. The Brexit-backing UK Independence Party is holding its second leadership election of the year following several high-profile resignations. A number of candidates have put themselves forward. However, the race was blown wide open when a violent incident involving frontrunner Mr. Woofle left him facing investigation and potential expulsion from the race. A lot of drama over there. Well, today, one of the party's most senior gay figures, London Assembly member Peter Whittle, has thrown his hat into the ring, and he is openly gay. So why is this still important? It is still important. If elected, he would be the first openly gay leader of a UK-wide party. There are already several out political leaders in Scotland, but no openly gay leaders of a UK-wide party. This is a big deal, and it doesn't matter what his political ideology is. It's this piece where little kids can see individuals serving in public office, particularly little LGBT kids, and say, you know what? That option is open to me. Whereas right now, they're not seeing that role model. And not just little kids, but adults too. Adults who are thinking, I don't want to be the first gay one. I'm not sure what that's going to be like. So having someone out and running for this position and maybe even get elected, it really does a lot of good. I remember years and years ago, we had Dennis Dyson on the show. Dennis was working for the Victory Fund at the time, and I was a Brattleboro select person there in Brattleboro, Vermont. Hi, everybody in Brattleboro. I know you guys listen to us on Monday nights on WVEWLP, Brattleboro Community Radio. Well, Dennis was telling us it's so important at all levels of government, whether you are looking to be the first openly gay leader of a UK-wide party, or really and truly you are running for dog catcher, out candidates make a difference. It tells other people this option is not closed to you. And for many individuals who don't want to be that first person, this is a big deal. So we'll see what happens with that. Tony Perkins is an evangelical ally of Donald Trump. He has now claimed that it would be better to disband the military. It's better to disband the military than to allow trans people to serve. If that were his choice, he would disband the military. The anti-LGBT Family Research Council head has close links with the Republican billionaire presidential hopeful. Earlier this year, when Mr. Trump was mocked for misquoting the Bible in a speech, he revealed it had been co-written by Tony Perkins. Trump, who has also rallied with Perkins on a number of occasions, later made a $100,000 donation to his church for flood relief, so they are very much tied together. Tony Perkins was on the radio and he said this, quote, "So we see the administration pushing forward without congressional input on integrating transgenders into our nation's military. What else can this administration do to the military other than just disband it?" But later he corrected himself by saying this, quote, "I probably need to take it back." By the way, not I should take it back, but I probably need to take it back when I said the only thing worse the president could do would be to disband the military. Actually, that might be better. We're probably better off without a military that is not compromised because we think we have a military that's defending our country and able to do that, but we have a military that in many ways is a hollowed out shell. At first, we thought he was apologizing for saying, nah, maybe we should disband the military. Then he apologized and said, no, we definitely should disband the military if trans folks are integrated into the armed services. Sad, sad stuff. Sad stuff. Democratic vice presidential candidate Tim Kaine. We love Tim Kaine. He's called on school districts to take a proactive approach in tackling homophobia. The United States senator from Virginia, who is Hillary Clinton's running mate, he made a video for National Coming Out Day. In the clip, he said this, quote, "LGBT kids get bullied at a rate much higher than others. As part of school safety funding, we need to make sure that the school districts that receive funding are really serious about reducing bullying. It's really important for adults, especially adults in leadership positions, to be very public about a message of accept who you are. You're going to be able to live a great life just as you are. It's important to let kids know, be who you are, be proud of who you are. You're made the way you are for a reason. You should celebrate that and accept it and not feel bad about it." There you go. Tim Kaine making a message for National Coming Out Day. We love that. On the other side of the spectrum, Republican congressman, again, this is a congressman. We have talked about him before, but I want to remind you before I tell you this, It is a congressman. Louis Gohmert has claimed that God might have flooded the world in biblical times because of gay marriage. This congressman sits in the House of Representatives for Texas's 1st Congressional District, and he is one of the most anti-LGBT politicians in Congress. This is not, by the way, a state representative or a state senator. Not that it's acceptable there. This is a United States congressman. In an appearance on a Christian radio show this week, he spoke to an anti-LGBT activist, Janet Porter, and he reflected on her suggestion that God caused the Great Flood in the Bible because of homosexuality. The congressman said this, quote, quote, according to the Babylonian Talmud, there's only one other time in history when homosexual marriage was practiced. It wasn't the time of Sodom and Gomorrah, although homosexuality was rampant. It wasn't in Babylon or even ancient Greece. The only other time in history where homosexual unions were authorized as marriage was in the days of Noah. We know homosexuality was widespread in Greece and Rome and Babylon, and especially in Sodom and Gomorrah, but that's a little scary that it wasn't legal except before the flood. Yeah, so he's connecting the flood, you know, the one with Noah and the ark and all those pairs of animals, to gay marriage. That's a new one. I haven't heard that one before. Well, the anti-LGBT activist Janet Porter said this in response, quote, "This was the issue that led to the flood, and this will be a sign of what's to come, that as it was in the day of Noah, so it will be in the coming of the Son of Man. If we don't correct this, we, then we are crying out for judgment. We are crying out for the end of the world as we know it. This is serious stuff because it matters to God." I want to just say that I am in no way looking to affront anybody's biblical interpretations, certainly not looking to cast any dispersions on any of you listeners, your faith, your religion, but I thought that we weren't supposed to be saying this is what matters to God. That seems a little odd to me. And then applying equality in marriage to the time of Noah, that's a new one. I want to remind you that this representative previously warned about the dangers of gay people in space. I'm not returning to that story. I just like the idea that this congressman previously warned about the dangers of gay people in space. United States congressman. I'm not kidding. This is a real thing. Other fun stuff going on. Let's look at Texas. A Texas judge has quit the Republican Party after he was criticized for officiating a same-sex wedding. Justice Terry Jennings has sat on the Texas First Court of Appeals as a Republican since 2001, winning re-election in the conservative state twice. But Jennings has now stepped away from the Republican Party, opting to become a Democrat after growing concerned about the increasingly extreme views in the Republican Party. According to the Houston Post, Jennings began seriously considering leaving the Republicans after he officiated a same-sex wedding earlier this year. The judge recalled that when others brought up Republican stances on same-sex weddings, he said this, quote, "That's when I started thinking, well, maybe I'm not in the right party then." Earlier this year, the Texas Republican Party passed an official policy claiming that, quote, "homosexuality is a chosen behavior." We're still saying that, by the way. There were so many debates about, well, what was the platform of the National Republican Committee right here in Cleveland? Let's just look at Texas. The Texas Republican Party passed an official policy earlier this year that homosexuality is a chosen behavior that is contrary to the fundamental unchanging truths of the Bible. We still are at that time. We're not talking about some random people on a radio show. We're talking about the Texas Republican Party. And you guys are going to write me an email and tell me that the Republican Party is the one that supports gay people the most? No flippin' way. They are still asserting in a pretty darn big state that homosexuality is a chosen behavior contrary to the fundamental unchanging truths of the Bible. Yeah. Well, Justice Jennings told the Post this, which is a newspaper there, quote, "It's just a party I didn't feel comfortable being a member of anymore. You've heard the common expression 1,000 times, I didn't leave my party left me, And it's true. My values and principles have not changed since 2000, but those of the Republican Party have. Over the years, I've watched this great nation in all its diversity grow richer and stronger. In 2008, I was excited when we elected our first black president. Too many Republicans were not. As the father of two daughters and the son of a woman born before the ratification of the 19th Amendment, I am equally excited that we are about to elect our first woman president. Too many Republicans are not. I appreciate and embrace that we are a nation of immigrants, of individuals of many different faiths and ethnicities, all one under our Constitution, all of whom are guaranteed equal protection under the law. Too many Republicans do not. So that is a Texas judge, that is Justice Terry Jennings, who has now quit the Republican Party. Did folks watch the debate? If you can't see, because you can't see, it's radio, I'm putting debate in quotes. That was not much of a debate. Well, Anderson Cooper was the target of homophobic abuse after the second presidential debate. The CNN anchor who co-moderated what was described as one of the fiercest face-offs between the two main candidates in modern history, Anderson Cooper was the first openly gay man to mediate such an exchange, so that's a big deal. Alongside ABC's Martha Raddatz, Cooper asked a number of tough questions that saw him become the target of homophobic slurs on social media. I am not going to read any of them, but that stinks. That absolutely stinks. So, we love you, Anderson. We thought you did a really good job. Martha Raddatz of ABC, you certainly did a great job. Well done. Well done. Over in Alabama. Alabama's Chief Justice, who we said last week, we reported it last week, he was indefinitely suspended by an ethics panel over an illegal crusade against gay weddings. He has now fumed that radical homosexuals were to blame for his ousting. After the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in favor of equal marriage last summer, Alabama's Chief Justice Roy Moore tried to disregard the rulings, issuing a number of judicial orders in a brazen attempt to re-ban gay weddings there in Alabama because they're somehow outside the law. He declared the Supreme Court rulings, they don't apply. He said this, they don't apply in Alabama due to the state's anti-gay laws. Well, now he is saying that all the discipline action that was taken against him, he blamed radical homosexuals for the decision, which was taken by the Judicial Inquiry Commission and the Court of the Judiciary. He said this, quote, "This was a politically motivated effort by radical homosexual and transgender groups to remove me as Chief Justice of the Supreme Court because of outspoken opposition to their immoral agenda." I would just like to put it out there, you know, I do not have a law degree, sir. I don't, Justice Moore. I don't have a law degree. My PhD is in something very different. But I would probably argue that it wasn't the radical homosexual and transgender groups. It was probably the part where you were ignoring the United States Supreme Court. Again, not a legal scholar, folks. Not passing myself off as a legal scholar. But I suspect it's the part where you said, hey, the Supreme Court, their rules don't apply here in Alabama. I'm just saying. I'm putting out an alternate theory for you. Okay. Another story. Research, 6 out of 10 LGBT men have never heard of PrEP. This is what a new study has now revealed. In findings published in the American Journal of Preventive Medicine, the report revealed that as well as the majority of men not knowing about it, a third of primary health care providers didn't know what it was either. More alarmingly, the study also showed that a number of men who had recently been treated for a sexually transmitted disease were still unaware of what PrEP does. We need to know what PrEP does. PrEP, or pre-exposure prophylaxis, is a medication that can almost completely remove a user's chance of catching HIV. It currently has around a 99% success rate. Now, that doesn't mean, some people hear that and they think, well, that just means I don't need to use condoms anymore. No. Absolutely not. We still have to protect for any number of sexually transmitted infections. But we do need to know that PrEP has a 99% success rate at removing a user's chance of catching HIV. So you guys need to know that, and I would just encourage you, this is all you have to do. You don't have to be proactive. Often I ask you guys to be proactive and do something. This time I'm not asking you to be proactive. But next time you go for a physical, just ask your doctor if they know about PrEP. That's all. And by the way, if that means that you have to be proactive in making a physical, you should be doing that, folks. We do know that the LGBT community, there is certainly reluctance to go see their healthcare provided, and that makes sense because there are any number of healthcare providers that are not specifically trained to work with LGBT patients. But should you have a physical coming up or some sort of doctor's appointment with your general practitioner, please, please talk about PrEP with them. It doesn't mean you are going to go on PrEP, but just ask them if they know what PrEP is and encourage them to learn more, because it very much might be an option, if it's not for you, for another one of that doctor's patients. So just bring it up next time you go. And everyone, please go get a physical. They're very important stuff. A hockey player. Here's our sports story of the week. Harrison Brown has become the first openly transgender athlete on a United States pro sports team. Brown, who is currently playing for the National Women's Hockey League team, the Buffalo Buttes, announced his trans identity publicly this week. In his debut game following the announcement, the player scored a goal and was overjoyed to hear his name across the loudspeaker. The player spoke about his identity to ESPN. He said this, quote, "My family is starting to come to grips with it. Now it's my time to be known as who I am, to be authentic, and to hear my name said right when I get a point or to see my name on a website. I'm still the same player. I'm still playing in the body that I did last year. I'm still the exact same person. I'm just a different name and different pronouns. That's it. I'm still Brownie," which is his nickname. I love that. An out trans athlete on a United States pro sports team. Right there in good old Buffalo, the Buffalo Buttes. Good stuff there. Good stuff there. There's a Ben Carson story. Do we want to do the Ben Carson story? We could do the Ben Carson story. Failed Republican presidential hopeful Ben Carson. He has now claimed that same-sex marriage will lead to mass killings in a world where it's every man for himself. Ben Carson, really giving motivational speeches everywhere he goes. You can see him next year at a Pride celebration near you. No, you won't. But Dr. Carson, who dropped out of the Republican race earlier this year and rallied around Donald Trump, he made these shocking comments at an event in Springfield, Missouri. In a speech to the Pensmore National Symposium on Religious Liberty, the former neurosurgeon warned that conservatives must stand against the ever-growing government on issues like gay marriage. According to the Springfield News Leader, he warned that otherwise there will be mass killings once again. The peace that we experience now will be a memory only. This is the nation that stands between peace and utter chaos. He told reporters the whole gay marriage issue could bring about the grim future. There you go. Motivational speeches. I suspect that if you guys are looking for an officiant for your same-sex wedding, it's not going to be Ben Carson. You know that, right? Like, don't pursue Ben Carson. He's not going to be the best option for you. And finally, can I just give a shout out to Rosie O'Donnell? I've always loved Rosie O'Donnell. I grew up watching Rosie O'Donnell on VH1 Stand Up Spotlight, you know, the whole red brick background. I loved her as a comedian. I met her years and years ago at a Planned Parenthood event where I was doing some educational theater with teens, and I have this great picture of her. I love that she lives her truth. Right, and she's openly struggled with some mental health issues, and she has talked about that before, and she speaks her mind, and she's talked about her own weight. She's just very open and authentic to me. I love Rosie O'Donnell, and the fact that she has been thrown into the presidential process against her will by continuously getting slammed by the Republican candidate. I remember when he first brought up her name in a Republican debate, and he was asked, you know, I think by Megyn Kelly, why do you call women all these horrible names? And he said, well, no, that's just Rosie O'Donnell, as if that's okay. And I remember she tweeted, wow, I can't remember the exact tweet, but I can't believe my name was just brought up that way. Try explaining that to your kids. Well, after staying mostly silent on the ascendancy of Donald Trump, Rosie O'Donnell is now speaking up. The out comedian, actress, philanthropist, and television personality has used Twitter over the past few weeks to blast the businessman and his increasingly horrific behavior, and he cannot rise above this, right? So people are thinking, well, why does she get to do it? Because she's not running for president. Well, Rosie O'Donnell has now hinted on Twitter that she may be taking legal action against Trump's continued defamation of her. So we will see what happens. Her recent advocacy may be sparked by Trump's repeated boasts of bullying her. He boasts about bullying her. No, you can write me an email later in the week and say he is the best candidate for the LGBT community, and I will write you back and say I do not agree with you. My friends, that is all the time we have. You guys, get out there, go use your voice, go make a difference, and please remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?